one of the topics that's come up on just about every one of my shows has been the crisis that we are experiencing here on Long Island with substance abuse, whether it is the heroin epidemic or the prescription drug epidemic. And both of them are just devastating. And we've heard stories about, of course, the famous situation in Medford where several people lost their lives. It turns out it was a young couple perpetrating this, and it's not something that anyone really could have expected. As a result of that, there's been all kinds of investigations, and we even saw one of our own personal doctors headlined for doing things that he totally shouldn't have been doing. And it just affects everyone. It isn't just the doctors. It isn't just the people themselves, but it affects everybody involved. And when I announced that I was going to be doing some special programming on this, the feedback that I got was, I don't think I've ever posted on Facebook and gotten so much feedback, not only on my posts, but also privately. And the biggest criticism that I got was, this is not a young person's issue. This is really affecting so many people. That's kind of what I'm going to try to do today, to bring down and show some of the personal impact that this situation has been having. I was approached by someone who going through a situation to protect anonymity. We'll just use pseudonyms. So let's call you John. So, John, good morning and welcome to the program.
Good morning.
John, why don't you tell us a little bit about your basic background? Where do you come from? And
I come from the island. I grew up on the island, never left. Like it here. Actually, I love it here. But, that's about it.
Mm-hmm. So you went to school here. You're a small business owner. You've had
yes.
a business here. You're married, have a family.
All of the above.
Mm-hmm. So what situation have you found yourselves in recently?
Well, would you like to go from the beginning or just...
Sure. Well, first of all, let's just talk about why did you want to come on today? Why did you want to talk to me today about this?
I just really wanted to reach, as many people as I could about some of the pitfalls that they're going to face should they realize, a kid needs help.
Actually, it probably could be just about anyone, right? One of your loved ones is in a substance abuse situation, and what do you do? What are you going to be up against?
That's exactly it. And, once you'll open up and accept the fact that your family has a problem, if you're willing to talk to people, you will come across, there's no one you're not going to come across that doesn't know of someone or actually have someone in their family. And in the end, it can be a huge help to you to open up, as they say, own this thing so that you can start to put the pieces back together again.
So tell us a little bit about your personal situation.
We've got a 20-year-old son, and 3 years ago on the golf course, I get a phone call. He was in a car accident. So I get over to see him, and the cops found Oxycontin in his car. And that kind of jump-started the whole thing.
So now, for people that aren't aware of that, what is that?
It's a painkiller.
Okay, and where do you get that?
You can get them anywhere, honestly.
Okay, and do you know where he first came across them?
Where he first came across, no. That we don't know, but over the next 3 years, through tracking phone calls, emails, text messages, we compiled quite a list of names. And like I said, you can get them just as easily, if not easier, than a six-pack at 7-Eleven.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the connections that I have made on my my programming is the fact that I see this prescribed. Some of the things that doctors are prescribing to people who come in with whatever it is, they just seem to write. It's almost like when you go to a doctor, you have to get a prescription. It's like you can't be sent home without something. And I think that's a mentality of some medical practitioners and also some patients. I went to the doctor and I didn't get anything. And I really think that kind of perpetuates it a little bit. I mean, I have been given myself oxycodone as a prescription for things that, in retrospect, now that I know more about it, surely there could have been something lower on the scale that would have done the trick. So I think that's probably part of it. I think a lot of people probably, a lot of young people are probably finding this in the medicine cabinet.
There's probably not a medicine cabinet anymore, anywhere, that doesn't have something that the kids will grab. And if they can't grab what it is they want, they'll grab what it is they can get. But, you know, like you had said, there are many things that are available, whether they be herbal. But, you know, for some reason, medical profession doesn't really care for that. They really won't acknowledge the fact that they're out there.
That's true. That is there. That is definitely, that's a whole nother story with the whole infiltration of the pharmaceuticals into our lives in every way. But let's get back to your story. So you realize that you've got a problem. And when did you get to the point where you realized you needed outside help?
He actually got to the point where he realized he needed outside help. And he started placing the phone calls to go get help right before Christmas.
That's this year.
This year, yep. And they told him 2 to 3 weeks, come on in, and we'll talk to you. And then maybe 2 to 3 weeks after that, we'll have a bed for you.
Okay, so this is a person who has decided internally they've gotten to the end of their line. They're at their bottom, they need help, and they're being deferred a month.
Oh, yeah, minimum, because there was no guarantee when a bed would open.
Okay, so this is someone who was looking for, he decided he needed to go someplace else to get away?
He knew he needed inpatient help.
Okay.
He wanted to go in to get help.
So he had found out about other, he had tried other things before, non-inpatient?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, so that's when you really got to the point where you were struggling, was when you needed this inpatient care.
We thought that was going to be the worst part.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as everything escalated, that was just the tip of the iceberg. I mean, that anybody that I've spoken to that is recovering, they all said the toughest step is saying that you need help. That's the first way to get it fixed. I'm not so sure about that anymore. I think it's getting the help you've decided you need. That's the problem.
It's a huge hurdle, right? You're ready, but there's not something available.
You know, as we sit here right now, there's not a bed in Suffolk County for a guy. There's not a bed on Long Island for a female that wants to go in and get help right now. Not one bed.
So there's a supply problem.
Oh, a huge problem.
So that was, the first struggle was to find a place to actually go.
Yes.
And then what happened? Let me just explain to the listeners. One of the things that John and I have talked about beforehand is that we're not going to give any specific names because, for a whole host of reasons, but so we're just going to refer to facilities and practitioners in the generic sense. So you find a place.
Well, it started in the emergency room. He wound up overdosing.
Okay, so he tries to get help. He finds out it's going to be a month, and he doesn't make it to the month to have his intake meeting.
It was actually the night that he got the word that there was no bed for him, that he overdosed. So off we go to the emergency room. We realize now there's a huge problem that needs to be dealt with. They tell us they're going to send a social worker down, and she's going to get him set up in a facility that will help him. So in the end, we got a sheet of paper with a list of places to call to see if they had a bed for him. That was the help.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Now, all of the places on this list were the places he had called the day before.
Wow. Okay. So that was not help. The person was trying to be helpful, but it didn't wind up being actually helpful because
it was pretty much useless.
Yeah. And when did this happen? Was this over a weekend or?
It started on a Thursday night.
Okay. So he had tried to make these calls during the week even.
Yes.
So then what did you do? The social worker at the emergency room gives you information that's not helpful.
They released us. They had no reason to keep him. They said, you know, you're on your own. There's nothing we can do for you. So we go home. 45 minutes later, he overdosed again.
Wow. Okay. So This is just, so to me, the first thing that I'm saying is, thank goodness. Like, what about people that don't have family members that are so close to them that they're in tune to what's happening or whatever? You know, what happens? How fortunate was he? Then what happens? Back to the emergency room?
Back to the emergency room. Now I'm getting furious. So I looked at the nurse on the second go around, and I said, if you release my son again, I will choke you. I will choke you in your own emergency room if you let this kid let his feet hit the street again. Now, I knew him personally, so it was kind of a help. They tried to work a little bit harder for us.
We're not advocating threats of violence to medical professionals.
No, not a good idea, but unfortunately that's where my mind was at.
And fortunately you weren't arrested for that, because that could have, seriously though, in a different situation, that could have just further compounded a problem.
Yeah, I'd say.
Yeah. Okay, so you get through to them, and what were they able to do?
Well, they went through making the phone calls again to try to get him a bed.
Okay, so that now they're making the phone calls on your behalf instead of just giving you a list of phone numbers to call. So maybe they know the right person to call or the right words to say.
Right. You'd like to think so. In the end, they did find some place. It was in Nassau County. So we had to sign him out of the emergency room where we were, put him in the car, and drive him to Nassau County so that he could go into the detox unit there. Now there, we were fortunate in that he was running a low-grade fever. So they couldn't put him in the detox floor because of the fever. They put him in the medical wing. And this is where we began to get our education, really, on how they deal with this. They sent a psychologist to talk to us, and he sold us. He basically told us everything you would want to hear as a parent in our situation, and we believed him. I mean, why shouldn't we?
And what was it that he told you?
He's going to go on to the detox floor, get everything out of his system to begin with. Then they can start the substance abuse treatment. He'll get psychological attention one-on-one. He'll get group meetings.
Basically, he's laying out the treatment plan, saying, don't worry, we're going to take care of your son, and we've got a plan for how to help him over this crisis that he's in right now.
Bingo. Thank you.
Okay. So it's not going to solve all his problems, just address the emergency.
Right. Now, the only thing he did tell us was that insurance is very tricky. The insurance did say that our son was covered for 30 days of treatment. The psychologist, on the other hand, clued us in on the rest of it. If you warrant medical attention 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, they can keep you in the hospital to do this. But if not, what the insurance company will probably do is give you 2 to 3 days of treatment and then release you.
It's not that the insurance company releases you. They just say that's all they're going to pay for.
Thank you. Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
So it's another thing that people don't focus in on. The insurance company is only talking about what they're going to reimburse you for. They don't make treatment decisions per se. But the converse side of that is, who can afford the remaining 28 days of treatment on an inpatient basis?
Mm-hmm.
It's a fortune.
That it is.
Did you get a number?
Not from that facility. We wound up taking him from there and moving to another facility because some of the things that were beginning to happen there were really, they rubbed me the wrong way. Something wasn't right.
So you are able to be there and to ask questions and be able to run through the whole thing. I think we should probably also tell people you've got a little bit of an emergency services background. So maybe you might be able to see or pick up on things that maybe the typical parent might not be able to. Or in a situation of maybe your parents aren't around and able to help you, maybe your friends are trying to help you, they're certainly not going to be in tune to this kind of thing. So your red flags go up that this is really not going to be a good place to be. So then you find a second place to go.
Mm-hmm. Now that place, I can give you a number. It was $500 a day. They were very limited in the insurances that they would take. And at this stage of the game, it really didn't matter what they wanted. But the second time around, and I got the name of this place from speaking with friends of mine, I went there and looked. You have to go and look.
What we're trying to do here is give takeaways for other people who might find themselves in this situation. And it's ask lots of questions. Don't just listen to the insurance and inspect the program and the facility yourself.
That's a must.
Mm-hmm.
Before I went to the place out east, I was ready to board a flight to go to Detroit. My wife's really, really good with the computer. Looked up a place. It looked beautiful. It sounded great.
They had a real good story, lots of glossy pictures.
Oh, yeah, all of it.
Yep.
And then you get to the blogs from different people on either, you know, their own family was there or they were there themselves. And all of a sudden, this pristine place, it looked, you know, like it was a horror show.
So how do you differentiate between, of course, the chances that the people that are there aren't going to be thrilled? If it didn't work for a particular person, the family members might not think well of it. How did you differentiate between the noise of, you know, somebody not being happy and really just getting a bad sense?
I mean, you kind of nailed it. If you had a bad experience there, you're not going to have anything good to say about it. But there was one particular blog, very well written, very lengthy. And it's just, you kind of go with a gut feeling.
Mm-hmm. There wasn't a lot of positive feedback posted.
No.
Okay.
Not at all. To the point that local law enforcement, when this one fellow had called, told him to come get his daughter and get her out of there.
Yeah. This is now the second place. No, we're on the third place now that you've looked into and doesn't pass the smell test.
Right. Absolutely.
All right. And now how many days has gone by with all this?
This is all taken place. Now we are in the third day of the first overdose and three facilities.
Okay. So we're not talking about something that, you know, I know normally when you need medical care, oh, you know, you go see this doctor, you got to wait for an appointment, blah, blah, blah. This is rapid fire. This is a massive disruption in everybody's lives.
Oh, yeah. In a huge way.
You can't have a job that you can't miss a few days. What are some of the obstacles that other families could trip over with this? You got a job where you can't take time off or whatever. You're running a shop and you can't close it. It's really...
I don't know, honestly. And my wife and I spoke about that very thing. I don't honestly know how somebody could possibly keep a job in the midst of everything that was going on. And I mean, God forbid, a single parent that had to go through this?
Yeah.
That is just mind-boggling how one parent could have to deal with what goes on.
Now, while you're going through this, is anybody offering up to you and saying, you know, as the parents, this is obviously stressful to you, you guys need some support too?
There was too much going on at the time to even be concerned about ourselves. We've also got a younger son, so we kind of needed to deflect, try to keep some level of normalcy in his life while everything was going on.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I had a great support system. We all did. But it's just, there's so much to do that you can't even think about yourself at that point in time. It's just not the time.
Yeah. So we're on to the third facility.
Mm-hmm. Nice place. I went there before they opened.
So you physically made an appearance and took a tour.
My son was not going anywhere until I saw it.
After the last two?
Yeah. Nowhere. And I got there early on purpose because I didn't want to meet administrators. I wanted to meet somebody that worked there.
You want to hang out with the janitor.
Exactly. And that's pretty much who I met. And he showed me a whole worksheet of the day, what the kids would be doing, or actually not kids, but the residents, you know, mm-hmm. what they do. Because the first place he was at, all of the help they told us he was going to get boiled down to a half-hour group therapy session with 50 people, and the rest of his day was spent watching TV or laying in his bed reading a book.
That's helpful.
Oh, huge. You know, and then we find out, well, you know, from the third place that we had gone to, they said, well, yeah, you know, that facility is undergoing some problems. There's staffing issues, and in the end, he wasn't getting any help because they didn't have anybody there to help him. But in the end, the insurance company was still paying for him to be there, so why not?
Okay, so the third place rang a bell for you.
It looked good. Yeah.
Okay.
It felt good. It felt right.
And how long was he there?
He was there 2 weeks, a
mm-hmm.
little over 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't take the insurance, so we had to pay cash on it, and it was worth every dime.
Yep.
Good people. They did the right thing. There was a lot of contact. He was calling us at night. We were able to see him on weekends, which mm-hmm. is something that was not allowed in the first place.
Mm-hmm. What must these facilities and these providers go through? For example, what if the family is part of the problem? How do you differentiate between delivering care that's appropriate for that particular person versus someone who maybe they're codependent with their, maybe if there's a boyfriend or a girlfriend involved, or maybe sometimes even your parents are part of the problem? How does a facility work out the details of all that?
I'm not really sure how to answer that, but the only thing I can say that, you know, the night watchman had told me, because naturally I'm going through my horror stories with him, you know, why I was there to look. I mean, he wanted to know, explain to him. He says, it's a horrible thing to say, but in the end, he says, you got to remember, it's still a business. And there may be people that are saying they're there to help. They really want your money.
You know, I think one of the other issues with this kind of a problem is that it's not like if I have appendicitis, I go in and I have the surgery done and then that's it. That's done. Check that off the list. This is the kind of thing that can be recurrent as well.
It absolutely can. You know, there are no answers for tomorrow. There really aren't. Either the person wants help or they don't want help. So while I've spent a good amount of time maybe down-talking some places, I've got another friend who's recovered, and he put it to me, he says, you know, if you want help, it really doesn't matter where you go, you're going to get it. But the problem with a lot of these places is that you're in with a mixture of people. Not everybody that's in a rehab facility is there because they want help. They're there because they're court mandated.
Ah, okay. So that brings a completely different dynamic into the mix. What other reasons are people there?
As the last place had put it to me, some people are there because their mom dated. Their parents told them, you're either going there or you're out of the house.
So mandated by the court or mom dated by the parents.
Right.
Okay.
So now what you have is a situation where a very vulnerable person is in an environment where, you know, and it happens. If people want to use, they're going to use, and they can get it, and they will get it in these facilities.
So now, you could wind up worse.
Easily, because it is there. But now what also happens in a lot of the facilities, I would tend to say more outpatient than in, you get introduced to new people who have bigger and better things for you to get your hands on and more avenues open. So here you think that because they're in a rehab situation, you know, that's it, the problem is solved. Now everything's going to get fixed.
Right, they're in a warm, fuzzy, safe place.
Not the case.
So it sounds like through your personal experience, some of our listeners who are maybe grappling with this kind of thing can know that it's critical to be involved, super important to have an external support system. It's advantageous to have a life that you can juggle around a little bit, not being rigidly stuck to things. And you really have to investigate everything yourself. And you have to be prepared to pay out of pocket. It's awful. I can only think of the people that I know that do not have all of that going for them. How tough that must be.
You can see now, or you know, we can see now why so many people just never get over this. And I don't even know that my own son will. I mean, to be honest with you, as we sit here right now, I don't know what his final outcome is going to be. But I've seen enough of his friends who were good kids. They don't stand a chance. They just don't, because the help that they need, it's just not available. It's not there.
Now, one of the other kinds of things that we talked about is it's not like this whole concept of substance abuse is brand new. I mean, you know, I know when I was growing up, we certainly did our share. What's so different about today? What environment is different, or how can people sit there and say, well, it was different then?
For one thing, back when I graduated, we had our pot. That was our thing. $5, you were a pretty happy guy for the weekend in my day. Now, what's become so different is what the kids are into now, like the Oxys, $35 to $50 a pop.
For one pill?
Street value.
For a pill.
A pill.
So for a pill that you get a prescription of 30 of them for your doc for your $20 copay?
Yes.
So you get the $20 copay, and then you get the prescription with the drugs that, you know, maybe you have to pay copay, maybe you don't have to pay copay. And then you've got something that you can either resell or, wow, that's, just do the math on that. That's unbelievable.
Right.
Wow.
That's the biggest difference, but it's not the worst difference. I haven't seen anybody overdose on pot. I've never even heard of anybody overdosing on pot.
What about like people that did things that were other than pot in your and my day?
I personally was never in that arena, so I don't know. I just know that...
All right, so I'm going to out myself and say I was in a little bit of that arena. And I know that one of the things was, it was a huge maneuver. Like, you would have to, like, plot the whole week how you were going to transport yourself to here and where and who you were going to meet. And it was so many steps involved between collecting the money and getting a ride there and meeting the right person and the whole nine yards that sometimes it was just – I was going to say a lot of the times it didn't even happen.
Right.
Like, you know, you'd have this plan, okay, we're really going to try this new thing or get tanked up on this, and it was a big trip.
Yes. Even then, even if it was just the smoke that you were looking for, you had to wait until you saw somebody who knew somebody who could get in touch with somebody. You weren't
And then
making,
you needed transportation.
On top of that, yep. But you were not making the phone call for what it was you needed from the phone in your home. Because,
oh, no, I don't know about your house, but in my house, the phone was centrally located, and even with the really long cord, you couldn't have a private conversation crawling up the steps.
That's why it was so difficult. But now, with technology, texting, Facebook, IM, kids now, they've got a whole underground world.
So you want something, you just put the word out, and it finds you.
Within 5 minutes.
So that's a big difference. What about access to cash? Now, I know, again, when I was younger, it was really limited. I mean, maybe you had an allowance, maybe you had a job, but it was a big thing to collect enough cash to do anything. Now, I'm not a parent, but it almost seems like kids have more access to cash with parents throwing the money around. Does that resonate with you?
Very much so. A lot of us did very, very stupid things. And I mean parents. Every parent always wants their kid to have it easier than they did. And it just looks more to me now like so many people are just throwing money at the kids to make them happy. But at $35 to $50 a pop, you can't throw that kind of money at them. A lot of the kids, that's where the crime starts, to try to support this.
So you wind up looting maybe your own friends and family's medicine cabinets. That would be the likely place to start.
Either that or just to get cash to buy from somebody else. And then, you know, that's really still just the beginning of the problem. The problem worse than that is that when they don't have the money anymore, and this was explained to us by the psychologist at the first place that we had gone to. That's why the heroin has become so prevalent again on the island. It's cheap. These kids will start looking for an oxy. If they can't find an oxy, they'll look for the morphine. When they can't find the morphine, the next step of progression is the heroin.
What you're talking about is not people who are just looking to hang out and party. You're talking about people that it's got a hold on them. They are addicted and they... I've gotten to the point where they aren't in control.
At this point,
anymore.
All control is over.
Yeah, wow.
And what makes it, you know, especially difficult when you're a parent is you can't look at this addict at first and say, this is an addict. It's my kid. That's what you're thinking to yourself. But you've got to get over that because when they have reached the point of addict, this kid no longer resembles the kid you know and love.
I can't even begin to imagine how you process that or what you do with that or how you recover from that as the family member, whether it's your child, whether it's your husband that's or wife that's going through this, whether it's your parent. I can't even imagine.
Everyone's affected. You know, the other thing the psychologist had said that is that this is a non-discriminatory thing. It does not care who you are. It will take you over. Meaning the drugs, you know, if you let them. And all of this nonsense I know sounds so cliche. But, you know, when you're the one that's in the mix, and there's somebody listening now who knows, there really is. There's somebody who's got an inkling that something is going wrong. And that was really why I wanted to come in here and talk to you, because this process does not get up and moving overnight. It just doesn't. And if you've got an inkling that there's a problem, get started.
Let's just say, you know, I know that there is somebody in my life, whether it's a child, a niece or a nephew, a neighbor, a friend, a spouse, another family member, that I'm pretty sure, or I suspect pretty strongly, that something is up with them. What can you even do?
All you can do, really, is sit them down and talk to them. Tell them, I know there's a problem. I've done it with a couple other friends in the last year or two. In the end, nobody is going to get help if they don't want help, and there is nothing you're going to say to anyone that doesn't want it. But sometimes, now that I look back, I think once the cat was out of the bag and the gloves were off, and we said, we know where you're at, that's what got everything started.
So I wonder, and again, because I haven't been on the other side of it, I wonder if at some level that kind of, I don't know if you would call that an intervention, but that kind of spark maybe creates an awareness for the person as well, so that they can maybe face up to it sooner than they might have otherwise. Or maybe it strikes them to say, whatever, it maybe wakes them up a little bit. Because I can almost see how probably if you're in the situation, it doesn't hit you all of a sudden. It's not something that you sit there and set out to do. And it's not something that as it's going, you're able to sit there and say, yep, I'm on that path. I think that you probably aren't aware. And maybe by somebody snapping you out of it, there's a chance that might make a difference.
I still believe the second overdose was nothing. It was a cry for help. The first one was that I believe was an accident. There were two other overdoses in our neighborhood that night.
That's actually something that we talked about beforehand, and I actually want to bring that out as far as an awareness thing, because it's not just the pills these kids are winding up with. It was crushed or something? It was mixed?
Yes. This was the first time he had purchased. He's very open with his mom, more so than me. He said it was the first time he had purchased it ground.
I just sit there and say, like, as a regular consumer, like if I'm buying food or anything else, why would I buy something not in its straight form? It opens itself up to suspicion right away. What do you mean you crushed it up? What would be the purpose of that?
Well, thoughts of clarity had long left his mind before this. Why he did it, I don't know.
Right, but that, I guess what I'm thinking is that might be a signal to someone that might be an issue, or that might not be, I don't know.
Go figure, a dealer that's not on the up and up, right?
but I kind of interrupted you, but you were thinking that maybe that it was mixed with something.
Yeah, I do.
Especially because there was other situations in the area.
Well, that and the fact that he had told us he had taken higher doses than what he had taken that night. So he was completely dumbfounded by the reaction. And then the second day, when he did the same thing, I mean, he had it in his pockets. So when we got home, you know, he was able to grab more, because his exact wording was, I knew I was never going to be able to do this again. So I did it, and wound up right back in the hospital again.
Wow. But like you said, who knows what the thinking is that goes on.
You just don't.
Is there anything else that you wanted to share?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I think it's just, I didn't want anyone to have to find out the way we found out. You know, granted, half the people listening are probably like, yeah, well, you know, whatever. That doesn't happen to me. I was that guy 3 months ago. That doesn't happen to me. That happens to other people.
Right. So it sounds like some of the things that you're saying is, have an awareness. If you do suspect something, figure out a way to, maybe that could be another discussion. You know, how do you have that kind of a discussion with somebody? But figure out a way to be able to introduce the topic with them. Gather the tribe together and everybody be open about it and try to be supportive of each other. Do your homework.
Yeah, be very leery of where you're going to send your kid for help. Be very leery.
Do you have any suggestions for maybe someone who thinks they need help? What might they be able to do to, you know, they're listening to this and they're like, holy crap, that's me. I'm going to be there next week if I don't get my act together. Maybe being able to find people in your family or that you're close to be able to reach out to.
Family is kind of like a double-edged sword. Because while our support system was definitely there, when you're caught in the throes of this, sometimes it can be tougher when too many people know, because now you spend half your day talking them off the roof while you're trying to deal with the problem at hand. So you've got to kind of pick and choose where you go. But if you're on the brink and you think it's time, start calling now. Because if you wait until you absolutely need it, you're in a lot of trouble.
John, I want to thank you again for taking the time to share your story here this morning. Hopefully it sparked some conversation. I know, just do a quick recap here. We're talking a little bit about the substance abuse problem that has really reached epidemic proportions here on Long Island, in particular with prescription drug abuse. I was promoting this. The feedback that I got was just astonishing. And most of the stuff that I got, especially the off-list stuff, was saying, this is not just a young people's problem. And then the second thing that I got was, this is not just the problem of the person who has the addiction. It destroys families. It ruins people's careers. It's just devastating all around. So many people feel hopeless and powerless. I want to thank you for being brave enough to come in here and share your story.
Well, thank you very much.